knowledge of what awaited on the other side. A crude explosive meant for opening up new holes in the rock. It was wired to the release mechanism. Kairos waved the others back and retrieved a melter charge from his combat rig. The thermal putty would burn even in a vacuum. He molded it around the release mechanism and activated the timer before backing away quickly. The explosion was silent. A flare of brilliant white, and then a sudden rush as air escaped from the entry chamber. Kairos tore what was left of the door from its hinges and cast it aside. Then he was through. He raised his bolt gun and fired at the release mechanism for the inner bulkhead. A solid kick, and he was into the facility proper. The entry chamber was a wide, high stretch of featureless walls, cut by a web of interconnected gantries and observation platforms. Thousands of pipes ran beneath the gantries, forming an almost solid floor of rounded metal. Klaxons were sounding, their shrill cries echoing eerily through the expanse of gantries and observation platforms, illuminated by a few flickering lumens. The pull of depressurization abated as Chade and Spiros followed him, their bulk all but sealing the apertures. Kairos gestured to the inner bulkhead, and Spiros wedged it shut. Chain raised his bolt gun and fired, silencing the nearest klaxon. More sounded in the depths. Kairos motioned for them to spread out as he checked the ore specs built into his vambrace. There were no guards, but he hadn't expected any. Not immediately. They would be relying on the booby traps as early warning systems. The ore specs pinged. They were coming. His auto-senses detected the low hum of an approaching grav shunt. The boxy tram-like vehicles ran along rails built into the sides of the gantries. Chain and Spiros took up positions to either side of him, as the lights of the shunt washed over them. As the shunt slowed, Kairos raised his bolter and fired a precise burst, shattering the lumens overhead. As darkness fell, the Raven Guard scattered. He heard shouts from the shunt, and someone activated a secondary light on top of the vehicle. The new light spun wildly, and he avoided it easily. Chain and Spiros did so as well. Through his picture unit, he watched them converge on the shunt, as he did the same. There was no need to worry about them calling for reinforcements. Short-range frequency emitters built into their battle plate would jam the vehicle's Vox equipment, as well as any handheld communication devices the passengers carried. The shunt began to reverse, back along the line as he drew close. Kairos leapt from the gantry and crashed down onto the roof. He slung his bolt gun and punched a fist through the top as autogun fire perforated it, drawing sparks from his armor. With deliberate slowness, he began to peel the metal back like foil. The shunt shuddered as Chain and Spiros joined him. Shouts of panic rose from the passengers. There were 15 of them, all smelling of sweat and fear. They fired wildly. They'd expected enforcers and got something much worse. When he judged the hole large enough, he dropped through it. His weight caused the shunt to sway wildly as he rose to a stoop. He knew that from their viewpoint, he filled the vehicle.
"Lay down your arms and you will not be harmed. There will not be a second warning."
Chain and Spiros peered in through the openings on either side, their bolt guns aimed at the passengers. Weapons clattered to the deck. Kairos nodded.
"Good. Now, take us to your leader."
Almais, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Aemon opened his eyes as the transit platform shuddered to a stop. One of his bodyguards opened the cage and stepped out into the corridor. The Crusader paused, one hand on his sheathed blade. Several heartbeats passed as the bodyguard studied the corridor ahead.
"Clear,"
he murmured. His voice was scrambled by the Vox distorters built into his featureless mask. Aemon didn't know why. A tradition of their house, he suspected. "This isn't necessary," Aemon said.
"Our life for yours,"
the one standing behind him said. Aemon turned. "Be that as it may, I'm perfectly safe down here. I am the only one with access." The Crusader stared at him in silence. Aemon sighed and turned back to the corridor. "Never mind. Come. He'll be waiting." The crusaders fell into step with him, one to either side. He ignored them, as he always did. It had been harder when he was younger. He hadn't been so used to shadows then. Now, it was second nature, like so many things. The corridor was barren by the standards of the cathedral palace. It still resembled the colony ship that the structure had once been, with bare grating and hull-plate walls. Access hatches and air shafts ran above and alongside it, hidden from view. He knew that legions of servitors, most several centuries old, worked unseen in those places, labouring to keep the heart of the citadel beating. Tangles of cabling and conduit sheathing hung from the ceiling, in places. There were no statues here, no pillars or murals, only bare metal and ferrocrete. No cyber cherubs either, which was something of a relief. No spies had ever come this deep into the city's heart, not even his own. No one could be allowed to know the secret of this place. It was his burden alone, and had belonged to his family since time out of mind. It was passed down from parent to child, back to the first of his line, back to Terra itself. In time, he would have to take a wife, or nominate an heir, some child plucked from the Lowtown slums and trained in the Scholar Progenium to shoulder the burdens of rulership. More than one of his ancestors had started out that way. The thought of doing the same to some unknowing innocent made him slightly ill, but needs must when necessity drives. Perhaps it wouldn't come to that. Perhaps it would all end here. The enemy his family had feared for so long were on their threshold at last. They would be here all too soon, and Almaes would suffer as it had never suffered. The sick feeling in his stomach grew worse. "Would that it had never come to this," he murmured. One of the crusaders glanced at him. He didn't know their names, though he'd asked often enough. He couldn't even be sure that they were the same ones every time. Only Tyre knew, and he refused, politely, to tell Aemon anything. Another tradition. Sometimes he thought he was caught fast in a cage made of tradition. Wherever he turned, a new one seemed to rear its head. He took comfort in knowing that all of them had purpose, whether he understood it or not. Some things had to be taken on faith. The corridor ended at a bulkhead. It could only be accessed by a biometric scanner. There were shallow alcoves to either side of the bulkhead, and as he and his bodyguards drew close, a pair of angels lurched from them. The angels were clad in filthy robes and golden beatific death masks. They had no wings. Instead, each possessed a profusion of jointed artificial arms, all of which were tipped with a variety of weapons. Aemon stopped. The two combat servitors were, like many such automata, things of sublime craftsmanship. They had not been mass-produced, but instead assembled by the hands of trusted Mechanicus adepts. Each was as individual as a snowflake, and as deadly as a squad of infantry. The angels undulated towards them, moving with that peculiar boneless grace that some servitors possessed. Beneath their robes, unseen limbs flicked and twitched, propelling them with inhuman swiftness. They uttered mechanical hisses as they drew near, the voximeters built into their masks warming up. Then one spoke.
"Identify."
Aemon pulled back his sleeve, exposing a scarred forearm, and drew a thin blade from within his robes. Quickly, he drew a bloody line down from the inside of his arm. Then he extended it to the angels. The servitors crept close, like wary hounds. Thin filaments, biometric sensors, extended from ports on their masks and brushed against the wound. One of the angels looked up, the blind eyes of its death mask fixed on Aemon's face.
"Access granted."
"Thank you," he murmured. The guardians retreated to their alcoves. Aemon glanced at his bodyguards. "I go alone from here." They didn't protest. They never did. He went to the bulkhead and placed his hand against the biometric auger built into the frame. Hundreds of hidden sensors flickered to life, scanning him for weapons and God Emperor alone knew what else. It took only a few moments. The auger chimed, and the locking seals of the viewing port set into the bulkhead released with a slow sigh of stale air. Eamon leaned close and peered into the darkness beyond the bulkhead. The inhabitants of the chamber had no need of artificial light.
I am here.
What news?
The words shuddered through Eamon, deep and awful. The voice of the being he knew only as the Anchorite. The secret hidden at the heart of Almace.
They are coming. They will be at our walls soon.
And the others?
Eamon shrugged. He is an Imperial Fist. A low rumble of monstrous laughter shook the air. Eamon stepped back, unable to repress a thrill of fear at the sound. He had known the prisoner since childhood, but it never became any easier to be in his presence.
He knows that I am hiding something.
And so?
We have kept this secret for centuries. I cannot be the one who fails to protect it.
The Anchorite was silent for several moments. Then another laugh, softer this time.
Have you ever considered that it is not up to you to decide such matters?
What are you saying?
I am saying that we are but tools in his hands, and a tool does not question its use.
And what if he should discover the truth?
That you are here implies that he already suspects.
The Anchorite fell silent.
You were followed.
What? Impossible!
I have grown sensitive in my confinement. I can hear the beating of two hearts.
My bodyguards?
No. I know the sound of their hearts. This is new. Someone followed you.
Eamon felt suddenly weak.
No. No, not like this. What should I do?
What you have always done, young Eamon.
The Anchorite's words reached out to him, as it had done throughout his life, and the lives of his forebears. There was comfort in them, purity and certainty.
Have faith.
Chapter 15 7906-20 Odoacer System, Corward Edge.
We have found them, my lord.
Kelim looked down at his aide. The tall, gaunt mortal was clad in rich, oxblood robes and ceremonial carapace armor. Colchisian runes marked his cheeks and brow and lined his fingers. Prayer scrolls hung from his armor and rustled softly in the recycled air of the command deck. He stank of incense and rot, despite his tidy appearance.
Are you certain?
I would swear it on my life, great one.
The creature simpered with obsequious humility. Timp, that was his name. Timp. A foolish name for a foolish creature. A magister, he called himself, the leader of a minor cult, grown large enough to be of some use.
That is good, Magister Timp. Because it is your life I will claim in recompense if you have played me false.
The mortal blanched and began to babble assurances. Kelim waved them aside. He reclined in his command throne, listening to the ship's eager snarl. There was a demon spirit in the cruiser's engines, and veins of ichor ran through its pitted hull. In a few centuries, Lorgar's word would no longer be a ship, but something else. Something glorious. He hoped to still be its commander on its day of apotheosis, if only to see its final shape. He stroked the armrest of his throne as if it were the ruff of a hound's neck.
Easy, girl.
he murmured. The ship responded with a sound like a funerary bell. It smelled blood on the cosmic wind. The enemy was on the run, seeking safety. Kellam had harried the white scars for days, ripping at their flanks, giving them no time to make repairs or rest their engines. He knew the Khan's whelps of old, and knew that to give them a moment's peace was as good as handing them victory. But even so, he was wary. Though their fleet was depleted, there was still the battle barge to consider. No easy prospect, that, though a part of him was eager to test his skills against prey of such quality. Luckily, he had plenty of chaff to throw at it. He brought up a sensor map of the area, noting the positions of his fleet. The cruisers, Eucephalot, Skullhound, and Dagmar's Penitence, followed Lorgar's word, in a rough wedge. Their auxiliaries ranged ahead and around them, screening the larger vessels from attack. He knew the commanders of the three cruisers by reputation. The Eucephalot was commanded by Caspu Dimak, a singer of dark hymns and a cunning agitator, one of Amatnim's favourites. Dagmar's Penitence was under the yoke of the Thessalonian, a hooded enigma whose origins were unspoken. Some whispered that he was a Neverborn, playing at war. Those same whispers said he owed his physical form to Lacamhew. Whatever the truth of it, he was almost certainly one of the Dark Apostles' hounds. And then there was Gorham. A vox rune blinked.
"Speak of the demon, and he shall appear,"
Kellam murmured as he tapped it.
"They're making for Armes, Kellam,"
Gorham said without preamble. The commander of the Skullhound was a fleshless nightmare. He'd flensed his own head at some point, leaving only raw muscle over the bone. It gleamed wetly, even through the remove of the hololith. Brass sigils had been affixed to his cheeks and brow, hooked into the red meat.
"As I expected, brother. We've cut their little fleet in half. They no longer have the numbers to operate in isolation. Blood god's luck, that, eh?"
Gorham chortled, and Kellam resisted the urge to frown. Gorham was a fool. But he was right. It had been luck that had seen their quarry slip his trap, and only luck had prevented him from losing more ships than he had when the Raven Guard had decided to overload their reactors and ram themselves into the cruiser Gallows' tongue. While not so battered as their prey, his ships had taken enough of a beating to warrant returning to Pergamon when they had run the White Scars to ground. It irked him not to be in at the kill. But the thought of having his newly acquired ship blown out from under him irked him even more. Besides which, he thought it best to be visibly elsewhere when Amatnim and Lacamhew finally decided to settle the matter between them. He was not certain yet which side suited his ambitions best. Amatnim was a generous lord, but blithely pragmatic. Lacamhew demanded more loyalty, but had the ear of Erebus, or so he claimed. The wisest course seemed to be to wait until a victor emerged, and then immediately, and publicly, purge those whose loyalties were to the defeated party.
"I demand right of first blood, brother," Gorham growled. "One of them is trailing behind. I want it."
Pulled from his reverie, Kellam gave a negligent gesture.
"By all means, brother, break yourself on their guns if you like. I'm sure the Blood God will approve of your sacrifice. Are you trying to dissuade me or encourage me, Kellam?" "Whichever pleases you most, brother."
Gorham laughed.
"That is why I like you, Kellam. You're vermin but honest."
Kellam tamped down on a spurt of anger. Regardless of how things went, he might have to deal with Gorham.
"I praise," he murmured. "They should be coming into visual range any time now. Do as you will, but be swift. I can't have you compromising my strategy any more than you already have." "Is that what you call it, brother? A few demon hosts chained up in boarding torpedoes is hardly a plan." "Because you're only seeing the surface elements, Gorham. and that is why I am in command, and you are asking my permission to get yourself killed."
He cut the link before Gorham could reply and sat back.
Sometimes I despair at the state of the Legion.
He looked at Timp, hovering near his shoulder.
Are they ready, Timp?
Yes, my lord, and eager to die in your name,
Timp said with a wide smile.
They're at the gate, and your hand is upon the key.
Then consider the gate thrown wide. As soon as we're within range to do so, fire at will.
Timp nodded and turned. He barked an order, and it was relayed across the bridge. Kellum listened as his crew hustled about their duties. If he strained, he could hear the murmur of the Neverborn, waiting just beyond the veil. They were eager and impatient. There were 13 boarding torpedoes in the bays, awaiting launch. Each one had been daubed in protective sigils and sacred unguents to carry it safely to its target. Aboard each were volunteers from among the mortal crew, those who'd allowed themselves to become doorways to the primordial truth. Like the torpedoes, they too had been specially prepared, their flesh cut with holy pictograms, and their bellies full of the nectar of the gods. Unarmored and unprotected, their fragile bodies would shatter upon impact, but what would arise from them would be beautiful indeed. The Neverborn would swarm the ships of the foe, overcoming them and claiming the vessels in the name of the Word-bearers. Triumph and triumphal sacrifice, all in one. The gods would see him and bless him at last. And Amatnim, or Lacamhew, would surely be pleased with the addition of several new ships to the fleet. Kellum smiled as proximity klaxons sounded. The enemy had been sighted. Victory was at hand. Sabodan Khan leaned forward on his throne.
Estimated numbers!
The command deck of the Silent Horseman was quiet, subdued. The banners and totems that hung far above him stirred in the recirculated air, but the sound of their rustling was swallowed up in the drone of servitors. Canem shook his head.
Too many. That is not an estimate.
But it is a fact.
Sabodan accepted this and sat back. Tactical projections swarmed his throne, each one a decision yet to be made. Should they run or fight?
4 cruisers, including a ship of the line. Dozens of smaller craft, he murmured. And us with 3, and no escorts to speak of. Not to mention we're limping at half speed, so the Crassers can keep up.
We could abandon her, Canem said.
Sabodan glared up at him.
We've shed blood with them, Shaman. You know better than to suggest that.
Due diligence, my Khan. Someone must.
Sabodan grunted and tugged on his moustache. He considered it himself. Canem knew that. That was why the Shaman had said it. The Crassus was venting plasma, and its hull had been breached in numerous places. It was staggering in their wake like a stallion that was too stubborn to die. But death caught you in the end, however stubborn or fast you were. The only question was in whether you chose your own death, or it chose you.
Ogilvy is a good woman, a proud daughter of the Imperium. She will understand.
Canon spoke softly. Sabodan's frown deepened.
And if she does not?
She will. It must be done, my Khan. Someone must hold them back. We must reach Almace. Our guns will be needed. The spirits say as much.
I am not inclined to care. They have been singularly unhelpful thus far.
Canem smiled and nodded.
They said you would say that.
Sabodan shook his head.
Crassus, report!
He said, signaling a crewman to activate the command channel. Static was his only reply. Communications had become more difficult the longer they were out here. Something in the ether, or so Canem claimed. The Shaman believed that the void spirits were growing restless as the enemy polluted the stars with their presence. Sabodan thought that was as good an explanation as any. Whatever the reason, it was getting harder to stay in contact over long distances. If all the vessels in his impromptu fleet had been of the Adeptus Astartes, it would not have worried him. If. He shook his head. Might as well hope that the Warhawk would return and aid them, as wish for that. He grunted and tried to contact Orlando's wrath. Sabonin shifted impatiently in his command throne. Canem glanced down at him, features pensive. Sabonin frowned.
What are these spirits saying, Shaman? What do they say to you?
Fire and death, Canem said flatly. Always fire and death.
The enemies?
Sabonin said. Canem said nothing.
Contact established, my Khan, a crewman said. Vox only.
Sabonin turned.
So long as I can speak to them. Keel, do you have a visual on the Crassus?
Keel had proven himself an adept battle captain, if slow in taking the initiative. And if he survived, a satisfactory fleet might be rebuilt around him. The Vox made a sound like a strangled felid.
Say again, silent horsemen.
Keel's voice seemed to be coming from far away, as if he were at the other end of a great tunnel. On the projection before his throne, Sabonin could see the ident rune, signifying the Exorcist Grand Cruiser coming about. He frowned.
What is he doing?
He's falling back towards the Crassus, Canem said.
Now he takes the initiative.
Chah, idiot!
I need his ship in one piece.
Sabonin gestured to a serf.
Tighten up the frequency. Try to re-establish contact. Quickly!
He turned back to the projection. Blinking runes swarmed slowly towards the Crassus. Escorts and assault craft. The enemy had realized the cruiser was dead in the black.
They're coming into firing range.
Canem nodded.
It looks like the spirits have made the decision for us.
Sabonin nodded. He paused for a fraction of a second, considering the myriad consequences of his next actions. Departure preserved his vessel and the assets within it. They would be needed on Almes, that was certain. And yet, it irked him to leave warriors, even mortal ones, on the field. He glanced at Canem and found that the shaman was smiling.
Oh, shut up,
Sabonin muttered. Then more loudly,
bring us about! The intercept course! I want us between the Crassus and the foe!
He thumped the armrest of his throne.
If they want to fight, then by all of the spirits in the mountains, we'll give them one!
Sabonin felt the deck shudder as the battle barge began the slow process of turning back. He gripped his sheathed tulwar and felt his heart speed up their rhythm. Perhaps this was for the best. Running had not suited him.
Scramble, assault craft, he said.
Around him, the command crew snapped into action.
I want their fighters intercepted. Concentrate macro cannon fire on the lead cruiser. Target the rest with the bombardment cannons. Let us see if we can break up their formation.
Canem grunted.
What?
He murmured. Sabonin looked up at him.
What is it, Shaman?
Something. Canem shook his head. The wind is blowing in the wrong direction.
We are in the void. There is no wind.
Even so, it feels as if all the spirits are screaming. As if something is coming.
My lord, the enemy cruiser is launching boarding torpedoes,
a serf called out. Sabonin tore his gaze from the storm seer and turned.
Target?
Everywhere, my lord.
The air inside of the boarding torpedo was thick with the smell of blood and incense. Marcus idly tested the chains that bound him to the inside hull. He was one of the 13 volunteers aboard this vessel, and he could hear the others murmuring, praying, or singing softly. Like theirs, his flesh was cut into more pleasing shapes, and marked with ash and holy oils. Infection had already crept in, leaving the wounds livid and weeping. His bones moved within him, snapped by the force of the torpedo's launch. The vessel was meant for the blessed ones, not mere mortals, a sign of their favor. Every jolt and judder sent new paroxysms of agony through him. It was a good pain, a gift even. He grimaced as something stirred in his guts. The cold, radiated by the hull, bit into his back. numbing his shoulders and hips. But there was a fire in his belly, stretching up through him. The fire whispered to him, sang to him.
Soon, child. Soon.
It rumbled. Even at a whisper, it was akin to the roar of a conflagration. A hungry, grasping sound that tugged at every nerve in his body.
Soon you will split like the sweetest fruit and give way before me. I will wear your skull to war and carry it with me to his throne. Korn sees you, child. Korn waits for you, little brother.
Yes, Marcus whispered. Oh, yes, take my bones and meat, and make of them a glorious ruin, O Prince of Fire and Shadow.
The presence within him growled in satisfaction.
I will, little brother. Your fat will oil my blade. Your bones will be my chest plate, and your scalp my loincloth. I will eat of you and spit your blood upon my path to mark it. Rejoice!
Its growl thrummed through him, and he stiffened in delight. To be torn asunder by a prince of murder was all that he had ever desired. To cast himself into the fires of blood and slaughter was a gift greater than any a man might receive.
And well deserved, little brother. For did you not take the skulls of the worthy and spill seas of wine-dark blood? Did you not commit slaughter in our father's name? Rejoice! Call out to him so that he might witness this moment.
Rejoice, brothers and sisters, Marcus said.
The harsh croak of his voice echoed, silencing the others, save for the singers.
Rejoice, for we are blessed beyond all others.
Chains clinked as heads turned towards him, stiffly and painfully. Once Marcus had led such a congregation to war. They had daubed themselves in blood and ash and bared their flesh to the weapons of the foe, all so that the blood god might look upon them with a moment's favour. And now, here was his reward at last. Another thrum of pain reverberated through the hollows of him. He could feel the presence within growing larger, stronger. The closer they drew to their target, the more powerful it became. But though the key was in the lock, it had yet to be turned. Only through blood sacrifice could the sons of Korn frenzy forth in all their crimson glory.
We are here, little brother. We crouch at the threshold, waiting for you to throw wide the gate. You shall be the spark which births a glorious conflagration. Rejoice!
The all-slaughter descends, brothers and sisters, and we are its red edge, Marcus intoned. Chosen by the blessed ones who carried his word to us on cosmic winds. They give us this glory, my friends. They sacrifice their own joy for us, so that we might know the joys of the abattoir, such as none have known them.
The boarding torpedo was shuddering. Dim lumens flickered, and he could hear the hiss of escaping air. Proximity alarms moaned. The enemy was firing upon them, but it did not matter. The blade descended, and no power in the universe could halt it. He saw faces pressed against the bloody flesh of his fellow sacrifices. Eager and impatient, the sons of Korn clawed at the skeins of meat that barred their path. The thing within Marcus growled in pleasure, and he felt his wounds strain and split at the sound. Blood poured and pooled upon the deck, the heady reek of it thick in his nostrils.
Gloria Aeterna, brothers and sisters, he croaked. Gloria Aeterna!
The others answered him in kind.
Gloria Aeterna!
The klaxons were louder now, the lumens impossibly bright, blinding in their intensity.
Gloria Aeterna!
His heartbeat sped up, so fast that he thought it would burst. The torpedo was shaking fiercely, as if it might fly apart any moment. Between the cracks in the hull, he saw a red glow, growing brighter and deeper, and he heard the howl of the thing within him.
Gloria Aeterna!
Marcus closed his eyes.
Gloria Aeterna!
Impact,
a tactical servitor droned.
Penetration,
Sir Bowden demanded. Sirens wailed as crews shouted from their stations. The battle barge had intercepted a few of the torpedoes, but not all. On the viewscreen, Stormhawk interceptors hurtled through the void, dueling with the enemy's own attack craft.
Negative penetration,
the servitor replied.
Scanning. Scanning. Secondary impact. Tertiary. Negative penetration.
That's something to be thankful for, at least.
Sir Bowden studied the tacticum overlay that flickered about his throne. Ident runes moved in all directions. One of the enemy cruisers had managed to slide past the silent horseman and engage the Crassus. Communications were still out, and he could only watch as the two vessels spun in a slow, fiery gavotte. Broadsides lit up the void as the two cruisers passed each other. Shields were of little use at such close quarters. It was down to endurance, and the Crassus had precious little of that left. She died in silence, her guns spitting fire at her killer. The cruiser that murdered her succumbed a moment later, caught by a lucky broadside from Orlando's wrath. It whipsawed away, shedding fragments of hull plating. Its guns still blazed as it spun slowly away, the flickers of light punching into nearby frigates. One was consumed. Others reeled, coming to new headings, seeking escape, as the silent horsemen raged towards them. The command deck trembled as the bombardment cannons roared again. While normally used to pound a planet flat, the dorsal-mounted cannons could be put to great effect in ship-to-ship combat. Frigates hung burning in the void as the high-powered warheads shredded their hulls like paper. The remaining enemy cruisers were standing off, launching boarding torpedoes and fighter craft.
They want our hides for their gur, Sir Bowden muttered.
Cannon nodded. The Stormseer leaned on his staff, watching the carnage with a flat gaze. Sir Bowden couldn't say what the Shaman was searching for, but part of him hoped that Cannon didn't find it.
A good ship is worth much. The Silent Horseman would be a mighty prize.
And that gives us our opportunity. We can hold them. Give Keel a chance to reach Almes.
Sir Bowden activated the command channel, hoping that at least a few of his remaining ships would hear it.
Orlando's Wrath! All escorts! Reverse thrusters! Retro burn! Fall back to designated rallying point, Alpha Zeta!
His command was interrupted by a sound like a clashing of many cymbals and the skirling of pipes. He hunched forward, hands clasped to his aching ears as the sound grew shrill. Through narrowed eyes, he saw the bridge serfs collapsing, their bodies convulsing in apparent agony.
What?
He croaked.
Witchery!
Cannon hissed. The Stormseer leaned against his staff, blood leaking from the corners of his eyes.
Powerful!
His words were lost in a sudden clamoring that came from everywhere and nowhere at once. The air pulsed with greasy light. It spun and danced across the deck in malign fashion. The vox spat a stream of gibberish, children's voices raised in song, a woman weeping, animals snarling over a scrap of squealing meat, flies humming in their hundreds. The din grew unbearable, seeming to fill the entirety of the bridge. Beneath the cacophony, Sir Bowden heard the voices of his crew raised in alarm. Requests for assistance echoed through the vox, all but drowned out by the malignant noises. Something was aboard the ship. He could hear it, crawling between the deck plates and tramping on the outer hull. Sensor feeds began to flicker and go black. Quickly, despite the pain radiating through his skull, he cycled through the remaining feeds, searching for the cause of it all. He spotted one of the crashed ships, crumpled atop the Silent Horseman's dorsal section, amid the forest of turrets and sensor relays. It was a small thing, barely a fighter craft. There had been people aboard. He could see what was left of them, smeared across the hull, or tangled in the wreckage. But there was something wrong with the corpses. They were moving, twitching, as if something were trapped within them, fighting to be free.
"Got him! Sherman! Look!"
he growled, magnifying the image. Canem shook his head and peered at the images. He spat a single word in Korchin. Saboda nodded.
"We have been tricked,"
he said, his voice harsh. On the feed, the convulsing bodies had begun to bubble and steam, despite the lack of atmosphere and heat. The raw flesh split like overripe fruit, and something forced its way free, something too large to fit in such a small space, something larger than a man or space marine, something with great wings that snapped out to their full extent, even as the feed went black. Sabodan cycled through and saw similar scenes repeated across the hull. A great legion of nightmare shapes was now clinging to his ship. There was a sound from above, like a clangor of a great bell. He knew what it was, even if he couldn't see it. It was the sound of a monstrous axe striking the hull, again and again and again, hacking itself a path right to the bridge, not just through the physical substance of the vessel, but through the very idea of its solidity.
"Impossible,"
he murmured.
"Witchery,"
Canem said again, his voice hoarse. Sabodan snarled and shoved himself to his feet. Rage and helplessness thrummed through him. The latter was a feeling he was not used to. He looked at Canem, hoping that the Stormseer had some suggestion. But the other White Scar simply shook his head. There was nothing to be done, save endure. The sound grew louder. Sabodan drew his tulwar and cast aside the sheath. The chill air turned treacle-thick, and the coolant mist billowing from the cycle vents turned an ugly shade of crimson. Sabodan heard the crash of blades and the stamp of hooves. The mist thickened and rose, like a serpent readying itself to strike. And then, something made of rage and fire stepped from it. A face, like an open wound, twisted into something that might have been a smile. Teeth like knives gleamed in the light. Wings stretched, filling the command deck end to end. Beneath these wings, red shapes took form, lean and thirsty. They prowled about like hounds at the feet of their master.
"Yaksha!"
Canem spat. Lightning crawled across his armor as he slammed the ferrule of his staff down. Sabodan raised his tulwar, igniting the artificer power cells within it. With a roar, the Neverborn charged.
"It worked, Kellim!"
Kespu said. Kellim could hear the anticipation in his voice.
"I can hear the Neverborn singing from here. We should make the kill now. Take them while they're preoccupied." "By all means, Kespu. Which would you prefer? The cruiser, perhaps? Take care, lest you wind up like Gorum."
The Skullhound was dying, its communication severed. In its death throes, its guns blindly chewed the flanks of its allies. Kellim gestured to Timp.
"Tell our main batteries to target the Skullhound before they accidentally destroy one of us."
Timp hesitated, but only for a fraction of a second. He snapped to, robes swirling. Kellim turned back to the holoscreen and Kespu.
"Any communications from the Thessalonian?"
As he spoke, the Skullhound met its end, blazing away into ragged tatters of hull and endostructure. Lorgar's word purred in pleasure. The death cry of another ship was its favorite sound.
"None, of course. He is not one of us, Kellim. And he is eager, besides."
"So I see."
Kellim watched as Dagmar's penitence closed with the enemy's remaining heavy cruiser. The two ships traded fire with almost stately aplomb. Ordinarily, void war was a thing of cold, distant calculus, a game of numbers and calculations. This close, it was more like a brawl, and every vessel a punch-drunk fighter, swinging blind and hoping to connect. That was why he decided to invoke the Neverborn. There was an old Terran axiom. The odds weren't even, unless they were on your side. He enhanced the visual feeds. Demons crawled across the hull of the battle barge, tearing up armor plates, swarming into the weapons batteries, or capering wildly atop sensor towers. Only a few of the boarding torpedoes had struck home. The rest tumbled broken amongst the battle debris, their cargoes screeching in soundless frustration as they watched the carnage unfold about them, out of reach. The Neverborn would not last, even this close to the Great Rift. They could not maintain their hold on reality forever. So long as the blood ran, they would have sway. But that was good enough. The battle barge would be easy prey.
Gaspo, bring the Ucephalot into a flanking position. I want that battle barge.
Together, then?
There is enough glory for the pair of us, brother. Let the Thessalonian have his fun. Angorum gave us an opening. We may as well exploit it.
Kellum glanced at Timp.
Take us in! All ahead full.
The axe swept down, crunching into the deck. Sabodan staggered back, his heart's thundering. The Neverborn whirled, wrenching its weapon free in the process. It seemed to change shape from one moment to the next, like a plume of smoke caught in a charnel wind. One moment, it filled the deck. In the next, it was only slightly larger than him. Back and forth, as if it could not decide what it wished to be. Or perhaps it simply didn't care. It roared again, a sound like no animal or man had ever made. Instead, it was the clangor of steel and the snapping of bones. Its voice was that of violence itself. Sabodan cried out in pain as the noise assaulted his senses. A knotted, rust-colored fist knocked him from his feet and sent him skidding across the deck. As he forced himself to his feet, he saw his crew fighting, dying. Klaxon screamed, and white scars flooded the deck, attempting to stymie the demonic intrusion. A white armored body was cast into the air, all but bisected by the slash of his opponent's axe. Another warrior was pulled from his feet by one of the reptilian hounds that had accompanied the larger Neverborn, and shaken so fiercely that his spine snapped. Lightning seared the air as Canem shouted his defiance. Talwar in one hand, staff in the other, the shaman was the living eye of the storm. Where he walked, demons were cast screaming back into the realms between. But he could not be everywhere at once. The gigantic Neverborn fastened its white-hot gaze on the storm seer, as if sensing that he posed the greatest threat to its existence. It turned from Sabodan with a dismissive snort. Sabodan stabbed his Tolwar into the deck and levered himself to his feet. The servos of his battleplate responded sluggishly as he started after the creature.
Canem! Behind you, shaman! He roared.
Canem turned, even as the axe descended. The Stormseer lashed out, and the demon stepped back, its body wrapped in lightning. It roared, and its wings gave a great flap, knocking the Stormseer sprawling. A massive hoof slammed down, nearly crushing the life from him. Canem scrambled aside, but was caught by a glancing blow from the axe. He crashed down hard, denting the deck. His staff rolled free from his limp grip. Sabodan cried out and leapt, slashing his Tulwar across the demon's back. A flood of steaming ichor spattered the deck. It spun, axe hissing out, dog-like muscle twisted in a snarl. Sabodan felt the heat of the blade as it passed within a hair's breadth of taking his head. A normal man would have died with the first blow. His enhanced reflexes and speed were the only thing standing between him and death. He slashed out again and again, trying to lead the hulking Neverborn away from Canem. Something struck him from the side, knocking him to the deck. One of the hound things snapped its jaws shut on his forearm and began to worry at him, jerking its frilled skull back and forth with bone-rattling force. He dropped his blade and was forced to seize his combat knife. The thing's teeth cracked the ceramite, and he could hear the hiss of acidic drool burning away white paint. He slammed the knife into the side of its malformed skull, piercing whatever passed for its brain. As he used the blade to lever open its jaws, Sabodan felt the deck tremble. He managed to roll aside, even as the demon's axe sank into the already dissolving body of the hound thing. The blade gashed his chest a moment later, knocking him backwards. His chest plate smoldered, power cables leaking fluid. Something inside him had been broken, and he coughed blood. Another blow sheared part of his shoulder plate off and numbed his arm. Desperate, he closed with the creature, knife held low. A great claw fastened about his head and shoulders, and he was wrenched from his feet. The demon lifted him to the level of its piggish eyes and bared its teeth in a grin of triumph. Sabodan matched its grin with his own and slashed out with his knife. One of the hateful eyes went out, and the creature shrieked. It hurled him across the deck, and he slammed into a cogitator bank before rolling to the floor in a cascade of sparks and broken metal. He fumbled at the smashed cogitators, trying to pull himself to his feet. The demon laughed gutturally as it approached. Unintelligible curses dripped from its lips like molten brass as it readied its axe in preparation for taking his head. Then, a flash of azure. The demon screamed. Sabodan saw Canem thrust his staff forward like a spear, lightning writhing about the totems that adorned it. Crackling strands of electricity ensnared the demon, looping about its limbs and neck like chains. Blood dripped from Canem's nose and eyes, matting his moustache and beard as he sought to bind the creature. He chanted, his voice a hoarse roar. He hauled back on his staff, drawing the strands of psychic lightning taut. The demon staggered, arms outstretched, hooves scraping burning gouges in the deck. Sabodan quickly reclaimed his tulwar. Canem wouldn't be able to hold the demon for long.
"Strike! My Khan! Strike it through!"
the storm seer bellowed. Sabodan lunged, ignoring the drag of his damaged battle plate and the ache of his wounds. His tulwar's power field hummed as he rammed it up into the demon's chest. He angled the blade for where he hoped its heart would be. There was a moment of resistance, and then a gust of stinking heat that stripped the remainder of the paint from his gauntlets. Something like tar spilled over him, smearing across his face, blinding him as the demon howled in apparent agony. The howl went on and on, rising to unbearable heights. Sabodan forced the blade deeper, seeking something solid. The howl spiraled up into a shrill shriek that crashed against his senses, and he staggered off balance. He fell to his knees as the demon came apart in gouts of sticky ichor. For a moment, Canem's lightning licked over him, burning the filth from his ravaged battle plate. Panting, Sabodan met the Stormseer's crimson gaze.
"Do you still live, Shaman?"
"For a given value of the word," Canem croaked.
He spat blood onto the deck and wiped at his eyes. Sabodan looked around. The command deck resembled a slaughterhouse. The last of the demonic hounds had fallen to bolt shell and blade. Many of the serfs were dead, butchered by the now vanished Neverborn. Several white scars were mingled amongst these bodies. The survivors picked their way through the dead, weapons at the ready. Smoke hung thick on the air from damaged equipment, and torn cabling dangled, hissing and spitting. The view screen was riven by static, but Sabodan could make out one of the enemy cruisers closing in fast on the Silent Horseman's port side. The intership Vox was down, and few of the crew were capable of manning their stations. Sabodan hauled himself towards his command throne. The tacticum display flickered in and out, but he could read the situation regardless. The enemy were within range, and the Silent Horseman was wounded. Down below, fresh crew were dragging aside the dead and manning empty stations. Sabodan watched them, regret gnawing at him. If they'd had more time, just a few moments.
"Sabodan,"
Canem said softly. Sabodan looked up. the enemy were still closing on the silent horsemen. But now, standing firm between them, was the battered shape of Orlando's wrath.
Kiel,
Canem said, and it sounded like a sigh. Sir Bodin looked at him, and Canem shook his head. Sir Bodin felt a chill and turned back to the viewscreen. The weapons batteries of Orlando's wrath vomited silent fire, and one of the enemy ships twisted like a wounded wolf and fell away, dying. The heavy cruiser spat death full in the face of the enemy, and brief blooms of hateful light shivered in the dark as escorts were consumed by the fusillade.
"Vox them! Watch on us! Now!"
Sir Bodin said, half in wonder, watching as Kiel set himself against the foe. Static rasped across the Vox. Motes of fire danced across the black. Then, Kiel's voice, thin with fatigue and distorted by static.
"If you're going to go, Khan, now is the time. Our firing tubes are dry, and we're being held together by prayers and good intentions. We can't hold them off much longer."
"You are a brave man, Commodore Captain,"
Sir Bodin said. He relaxed slowly, hands flexing. Canem wouldn't meet his gaze, and he wondered if the shaman had foreseen this moment.
"Make it count, is all I ask. Save Almace."
"They're diverting power to forward engines," Canem murmured.
"She's an old bitch, but she's got a bit of bite left."
Kiel continued. Sir Bodin knew that the captain was no longer speaking to him.
"They're going to feel it. Emperor, damn me if they don't. They're going to know who we are. All ahead, full!"
As he heard Kiel's command, Sir Bodin barked orders, hoping he had enough crew left to see them enacted. The deck shuddered as the battle barge began to withdraw. Battered escorts closed in, shielding the larger vessel. Not many of those left, either. He looked at Canem.
"The spirits told you this would happen, didn't they?"
Canem nodded.
"I saw the skull beneath his skin," he said.
On the viewscreen, Orlando's wrath arrowed ponderously towards the closest of the enemy cruisers. The crimson vessels continued to fire, lashing the oncoming ship with waves of punishment. But she didn't stop. When the impact came, it was akin to the birth of a new star. A flash of brilliant white, splitting the dark in two. The command deck shook as the reverberations of the conflagration rippled outwards through the void. Klaxons whooped, and crew fought to compensate as the light swelled, filling the viewscreen. A halo of fire radiated in all directions. Smaller vessels were consumed instantly, swept aside as if by the hand of a giant.
"Status!"
Sir Bodin asked as the glare faded. Damage reports rolled in. He looked around the bridge, seeing only corpses and smoke. He bent his head, suddenly weary. The remaining enemy vessel listed badly. It had been caught at the edge of the conflagration, and was in no shape to pursue. Part of him wanted to finish the task, to break it, to take a toll of scalps in payment for Kiel and the others.
"Orders, my lord,"
a serf coughed. Sir Bodin was silent for long moments, weighing his choices. Then, with a grunt, he said,
"Bring us about. Broadcast the new heading to all surviving ships."
He slumped back into his command throne. There was blood in his armor, and in his mouth. Even as Canem had foreseen, he swallowed and looked at the shaman. Canem's face was a mask of bruises and blood, but his eyes were determined. He nodded. Sir Bodin laid his tulwar across his knees. He would not sheathe it until the battle was done, one way or another.
"Set course for Almace."
Chapter 16, 800440. Almace, Primaris Grade, Cardinal World. Aemon listened as his officers spoke, but took little of it in. Outside, the sky was the colour of an open wound, and crowded with aircraft. Every aristocrat with sense was getting out of the line of fire. They were fleeing the city in droves, heading for estates in the mountains or valleys. Most, he knew, would drag the earth over themselves until the shooting had stopped. Then they would seek to deal with the victor. Though the thought repulsed him on a spiritual level, he could not find it in himself to judge them too harshly. He wanted to flee himself, but where was there to go? And in any event, he could not abandon his charge. The thought of the anchorite sent a pulse of fear through him. Calder would know by now, or soon enough. Then what? Execution, perhaps? It wasn't fair. But what was in these trying times? He closed his eyes and tried to calm the thudding of his heart. The strategium chamber echoed with the sounds of petty disagreement. Half of the officers were noble-born, and they bristled at having a man like Tyre in command. Ordinarily, it was kept under control, but tension had a way of widening the cracks. Long-simmering resentments were coming to light, and Tyre wasn't helping matters. He heard the swordmaster curse and bellow, and his aristocratic subordinates return fire. They wanted to concentrate the defences on the estates and properties of their clans. Those officers whose only family was the ecclesiarchy disagreed. Tyre fought to calm both sides in his usual manner, by insulting both parties. Back and forth it went, all of them steadfastly ignoring the fact that none of them were in charge, and when it came down to it, Calder would determine where and when the companies of the regiment mobilized. "You look ill." Eamon opened his eyes. Canoness Law was studying him with her usual flat gaze. She stood beside his seat as always, her hands clasped behind her back. He could not tell what was going on in her head. Had never been able to, in fact. He'd always found her impassivity oddly comforting. "Are you worried?" he asked, forcing a smile. Her expression didn't change. "If you perish, morale will suffer." Eamon snorted and tried to pay attention to the argument, but it all seemed so pointless. Law was still looking at him. Her eyes pierced him to the quick. They narrowed slightly. "What is it, my lord?" she murmured intently, leaning close. Eamon hesitated. Law knew that there was a secret at Almace's heart, though not what it was. She knew that it was his responsibility, and by extension hers, to guard it, and she took that responsibility very seriously. For an instant, just one, he considered ordering her to eliminate the threat. She would do it, he knew. She would do it with a hymn on her lips. She would kill Calder, whatever the cost, all to preserve the secret. But he could not say the words, could not ask her to do such a thing, could not bring himself to commit such treachery, even in good cause. He shook his head. "Nothing," he said softly. "Not sleeping well. I'll be fine." "You drink too much," she said bluntly. "That is why you do not sleep." He forced a smile and nodded. Perhaps you are right. Excuse me." He stood. Officers turned, some making to rise. He waved them back to their seats. "Keep talking, gentlemen. I am listening." As the argument resumed, he went to the window and looked out over the city. His city. Beautiful and sad in equal measure. There was so much he'd wanted to do. Reforms he'd hoped to implement. It took time. It always took time. But now, there was no time. He bowed his head and tried to pray, but couldn't think of the words. He looked up at the face of the God Emperor, captured in coloured glass. A proud face, wise and kind. He knew that this depiction was based on his own great-grandfather. No one alive could remember what the Emperor of Mankind had truly looked like. Even the official accounts differed. Every writer seemed to have his or her own idea of who the God Emperor had been. Eamon, as a theologian, had his own thoughts on the matter. They were often contradictory, and he had yet to write them down. But he'd always intended to compose a monograph on the subject of such diverse perceptions and their meaning for the faithful. But it seemed blasphemous to even consider the subject with anything less than fervent awe. It seemed blasphemous to question. But he couldn't help it. His life had been full of questions from the very beginning. Things were no simpler now than before. The anchorite cautioned him to have faith, but faith in what? The God Emperor? Calder? Or maybe himself? Questioning his own decisions had become second nature to him. A planetary governor, even a cardinal governor, could not afford to act on impulse. Too much depended on his decisions. His first instinct was to ensure that the anchorite remained a secret. But another part of him wondered if it was not meant to be. Why else would Gilliman have sent Calder and the others unless it was to protect the anchorite? This world, this system, meant little in the greater scheme of things. Past the glass, he saw the faint impression of the refugee vessels crowding the suborbital docking spires. Hundreds of them, mostly small. The larger ones hadn't made it. Rather than thousands of survivors, there were hundreds, all bringing their own stories of terror and armoured monsters. Law had been against letting them dock. She'd insisted they were tainted. Their survival proved that they had succumbed to the blandishments of demons. Only by agreeing to allow her sororitas to debrief the survivors, overseen by the Imperial Fists, had he managed to keep her from massacring them wholesale. He glanced surreptitiously at her. She was watching the arguing officers like a hawk. Her hand tapping at the haft of her power maul. Tyre looked at her every so often, and Aemon knew something was passing between them. Finally, she snatched her power maul up, activated it, and slammed it down, cracking the table and silencing the military officers. "Enough!" she snarled. "The canoness is correct," Aemon said, seizing on the silence. He looked around the table, meeting the gaze of every man and woman in uniform. "I have a planetary sermon to give. I expect this matter to be resolved by the time I have completed it. Otherwise, I will turn over command of the armies to the canoness." Tyre sat back, smiling crookedly.
"Suits me,"
he said, with an air of triumph. Law laughed harshly, and her eyes blazed with interest as she took in the suddenly very nervous officers. "A burden I will bear gladly," she purred. Aemon nodded. "I leave you to it, then." His bodyguards fell into step with him as he swept from the chamber. He allowed himself a small smile. If only all such difficulties were so easily handled. Data spooled across the strategium feed. Sensor telemetry, auger feeds, long-range calculations. Reports by private vessels. All of it saying the same thing. The enemy was at the gates. Time was up. Their fleet was smaller than it had been, but still large enough to lay siege to Almais, providing they successfully navigated the asteroid belt. Calder felt something akin to satisfaction. It was good that the moment had arrived. Now he would see whether his preparations were enough. He turned from the projection and activated an encrypted command channel.
"Capulus, report!"
The vox squalled and whined for long moments, until a voice replied.
"Strike cruiser Capulus, moving into final position, Lieutenant."
"Good. Wait until the enemy have taken up orbit before launching strikes. Concentrate on the southern hemisphere. Maintain vox silence."
He paused.
"If the battle turns, withdraw from the system. Return to the crusade."
There was a pointed silence, and then...
"And... tell them what?"
"That we failed." "Noted. Dawn be with you, Lieutenant." "And with you, Capulus."
Calder cut the channel. The Capulus would wait just out of sensor range, behind one of Almace's moons. When they arrived, the strike cruiser would do what it could. They all would. Whatever came, they would not be found wanting. He turned again to the sensor feed from the asteroid mining facilities. Karos had managed to calm things down significantly, but they were still tense. The Raven Guard's last report had mentioned that he was entering talks with the leaders of the uprising. He flicked through the feed, cycling farther and farther out from the facilities, to the very edge of the asteroid belt. And there, in the distance, a gleam of light, growing steadily brighter.
I estimate a day, maybe two.
Calder stiffened. He hadn't heard Solaro enter the chamber. The Reaver seemed to have no more substance than a shadow when he put his mind to it.
Report! You were right, Solaro said.
Calder turned. The Raven Guard stood a respectful distance away, at the foot of the dais. Calder gestured for him to ascend.
He's hiding something. Took me a few days, but I followed him to a vault, or perhaps a crypt, hidden at the heart of this place. The locks are biometrically encrypted.
Other defenses?
They spoke over one of the dozen encrypted Vox channels that the Raven Guard employed. To anyone capable of listening in, it would simply sound like static.
Combat servitors. Antiques. Easy enough to slip past.
Solaro shrugged.
I could do it again, if you like. With a few skin samples, I could beat the encryption.
Calder paused, considering.
What else?
It was Solaro's turn to pause.
He was talking to someone.
Who?
I couldn't determine that. Himself, perhaps? Or maybe a prisoner?
Why do you say that?
Who else would you keep sealed away like that?
Calder nodded. A fair point. Solaro leaned back against the rail of the dais, the very picture of ease. The Reaver had an informal manner. Karos seemed to encourage a certain lack of discipline in his warriors.
Would you like me to procure a skin sample?
Solaro went on.
I can be in and out within the hour.
No. Did you record your discovery?
Solaro hesitated. Calder gestured.
I know you record everything. Give it to me, please.
Solaro sighed and extracted a data spike from a hidden port in his vambrace. Calder took it and weighed it contemplatively on his palm.
What are you going